Thanks so much for joining us online today. We're always encouraged to hear stories of how lives are being changed by the message of grace all around the world from what we do right here in Longwood, Florida. So if you have a story you'd like to share with us, please send it to stories@graceorlando.com. If you'd like to support the mission and the ministry of Grace Church, you can give conveniently online at graceorlando.com. Thanks so much again for joining us today.
Heath has a number of people, guests here that are visiting, and we welcome you and thank you so much for coming to share this time with us. A few weeks ago, obviously I know about this. Heath is Martha and I's son-in-law, and no person, he's one of the people in our lives, obviously as our family, that we love. But we not only love Heath, we deeply respect him also, not only as a man, but a man of God. So it's a privilege to introduce him to you. A few weeks ago, I heard him speak and talk about the things that he had learned, so forth, through this temporary—I started to say light affliction. It wasn't light to him, but this invasion of cancer into his life and the things that he learned from it and allowed the Lord to teach him in it is what's very impressive to me. It's impressive that the Lord's healed him. It's more impressive that he learned from it and the things that he did learn and allowed the Lord to change his life internally. So that was what's important to me. Heath is CEO, the Chief Executive Officer of IOA, one of the largest independent insurance agencies, insurance brokers in the country. They have over 50 offices all around the country and the world, actually. And he's been doing that for 8 years. He's been in that position for about 8 years. I first met him when he was probably 20 years old, when he came to the church where I was previously at the invitation and insistence, if there could be an insistence, of his mother and his dad, who were Martha and I's best friends before we ever knew Heath and before our children ever got together. But I won't take any more time. But he's not just good at what he does. He's a good guy, too. Very important. Heath, why don't you come and share it with us, please.
Well, good morning. Well, I guess Clark teed up the cancer thing for you, so I won't get into that first. But what I thought I would do is to preface the talk on cancer, what I learned through it. I figured I'd tell you a little bit about me, only to know where I've come from and to the understanding that I have today through many things, but especially the recent battle with cancer. I grew up in Pittsburgh, lived there till I was 9 years old, came here when I was nine. It was quite a bit different, culture shock, so to speak, when I came to Longwood. I had a pretty rough, maybe rough, I guess, is would be a word to describe it in Pittsburgh. Not like my parents. My dad grew up in the projects of Pittsburgh, and my mom's the one we always say was the rich one, the highfalutin one. She grew up in the trailer park. So they might have had some challenges in Pittsburgh that I didn't have, but I had a little bit of a difficult upbringing there. I learned how to fight early on. I mean, and I think about that as I was prepping for this, and I thought, wow, you know, I've got a nine-year-old son who's never been in a physical altercation, thank God, in his life. But prior to moving here at nine, I had been in plenty. So I learned how to fight early. I learned how to defend myself. Even when you were going to get beat up, you fought anyway. I learned how to just live in an edgy environment. It was kind of tough, and in a lot of ways, though, that was good for me. Also, as a child, I grew up and I excelled in sports and started at an early age. You know, I was going through some stuff last night, just looking at old trophies and old stuff that I threw away in an old closet. And I even didn't even realize, I forgot this, but I even was on the junior Olympic team for AAU when I was 12 in basketball. And I actually think that was the last year I actually grew, so that was about the end of my basketball career. But I did continue to excel in sports as I aged, to the point where I was all county, all conference, and then an all-state football player here at Lake Brantley. And I did it on, you know, I worked hard, but a lot of it was just sheer heart. You know, I just worked harder than anyone else, and I was passionate about it. I had, I think, almost 1,800 yards my senior year, and had a lot of success in that, and that caused, frankly, in my life, a lot of false confidence, a lot of arrogance, I guess, would be if I'm being authentic. I thought I was something. I thought I was pretty special. So again, I was a super competitive, type A, edgy kid. And I honestly thought, no matter what, you know, if you could do it or she could do it or he could do it, hey, I could do it. And even if it's maybe something they may be naturally more gifted or talented in than I am, I'll make up for it in hard work. So I just always felt like that in my life. And in some ways, that's a good thing. Some success came from it, but I took it to a whole nother level. You know, I was raised in a Christian home. I always believed, but to be honest, God was on a shelf. You know, I was in control. It was me, and I, and, you know, he's there, break glass if needed, but I don't need it. I got this. And that's kind of the way I looked at life, to be honest with you. You know, I used to, when I would read the word, which is very rarely, I used to read about this guy, Paul, boasting in his weakness, and I thought, what a fruity man that guy is. I mean, what kind of fool boasts in their weakness? And had no understanding of what that meant, and I didn't even read really what he was saying. It was just that one sentence that I would read it, and I would go, what a fool, you know, I boast in my strength. Who the heck boasts in their weakness? And I had no understanding, like I do today, of what that really means and who I am in Christ. So anyway, that was a little background on me. I got a college scholarship to play football, and I went up to Virginia and did that, and then without getting into too much of my past, I had a lot of ups and downs, but when I got back from college to come home for the summer, I told my parents, I said, you know, I don't know what I want to do for a career. I know what I don't want to do, and that's be in the insurance business like my parents were in, but I said, while I'm home, why don't I take the time? We had a small little insurance agency at the time we had eight producers at the time. I was number nine. And I said, while I'm home this summer, the one thing I liked about it is we had clients in every industry there was, white collar, blue collar, sports teams. And I just thought, you know, while I'm home, I can spend some time going out with our agents and get to know their clients in all these different industries. And maybe I'll find one that is interesting to me. And then I'll figure out what the heck I want to do in life. And, so I did that, and at the end of the summer, first of all, of the eight partners that we had, I was the kid, you know, bothering them, take me with you, let me go meet your clients, let me see what you do. And I grew a lot that summer. I got over the party lifestyle I was living, all about the girls and the party, and if somebody drank three, I drank 10. Somebody smoked one, I smoked five. So I was just kind of I was an excessive kid. But anyway, as I got there, I started to be around some very good Christian men and women that helped speak into me along with my parents. And at the end of the summer, I saw an opportunity in the business that was, you know, I had the used car salesman perception prior to that. And I thought, who the heck would want to be an insurance agent? But I saw the opportunity to be an advocate for clients and learn different businesses. And I saw a residual income opportunity, which was exciting to me. So I went ahead at the end of the summer and I said, you know what, I want to do this. Now, I was a little reluctant at first because I didn't want to work in my parents' business. I didn't want to be that guy. But in this job, I thought, you know what, I can kill my own food. I'm on full commission. So ultimately, it'll fall back on me. I'm not in some salary job. So at the end of the summer, I said, you know, I want to do this. I want to give it a chance. So I did. And I started off, and it was difficult the first year. But not long after that, I started to have some wins. I started to do really well. To the point in my mid-20s, I was earning well into the six figures on full commission. And again, all that did was inflate the ego and boost me up again, thinking it was all about me and how great I was, this young guy and all that stuff. So it didn't help me very much, but that's what came of it. There's a lot of challenges in between this story that I don't have time to get into, that humbled me or gave me a perspective, but it was always fleeting. You know, those challenges, I would always get this perspective, but it would always get right for a while and then it would go. And so anyway, I grew a lot from 96 to 2008. So after 12 years at IOA, I was doing very well in sales. Well, in January of 2008, our president asked my father and I for a meeting. And he said, hey guys, my wife and I are ready to retire. I want to give you 6 months head start notice. Kids are out of the house. I want to travel a lot. And we said, hey, great, Dave, no problem. We love you. We'll throw you a party. And shortly after that, or we leave the conference room, my dad grabs me and he says, hey, can we talk? Sure, Pop, what's up? He says, you know, Heath, you're not greedy. You've impressed a lot of people here. You do a good job. You get it. You wouldn't change the fundamental principles of the business. he was our CEO at the time. He said, I want to transition into the chairman's role and move towards my retirement. We have a great partner, Jeff, that can become the president. You should be our next CEO. And in the moment, without even thinking about it, real flippantly, I said, heck no, not interested, not no, heck no, have no desire to do that. It was 2008, economy's melting down. I was 31, felt totally inadequate, and just said no. And he says, okay. So maybe fast forward, I don't know, maybe 2 months. It was March maybe of 08, and he asked me again. And I flippantly said the same thing. Not no, heck no, no desire, not interested. I'm a sales guy, I'm a sports guy. This is not for me. He says, okay, well, now fast forward you all right up until June. It was right before, it was maybe 3 weeks or so before Dave's retirement party. And my dad asked if he could talk to me again. I said, sure. He said, son, I'm not asking you to think about this job or this the responsibility and all that. Would you do something for me? I said, Pop, I'll do anything for you. What? He said, will you pray about it? I'm like, yeah, man, I'll pray about it, but I don't want to do it and, you know, whatever. So, and I'm not a religious guy. I'm in a relationship with my Father who loves me. So I'm praying, and this is how I talk to God. It may be a little different than you, but I went home that night, and I remember it like it was this morning. And I said, I'm in my little house in Apopka, and it was just me. And I'm saying, come on, man, God, I'm 31. I'm inadequate. I'm a sales guy. I'm a sports guy. I am so, this is way bigger than me. I don't want to do it. I'm not qualified. I'm not some Ivy League guy. This is bigger than me. And to be honest, if I'm being authentic, there's probably a part of me that was kind of hoping he'd give me the rebuttal, right? Tell me, no, you are the guy. You are, you know. But he didn't. But what he spoke to my heart, and it was clear as it just happened today, it was like, well, Heath, if not you, who? And my first reaction to that thought was like, well, anybody but me. But I started to think about, I don't have time to get into how different our business is, but it is so 180 degree different from our industry. And I started to think about what our business would look like, because there was two gentlemen that really wanted to sit in that chair, that really wanted the position. And I knew in my heart, I believed anyway, that they wanted it for all the wrong reasons, all the reasons I didn't. I felt like they wanted it for the authority, for the accolades that come with the position. I felt like they wanted it for just things that weren't interesting to me then, nor are they today. But then I'm telling God in my head, and I'm just saying, but you gotta send me better, you gotta send me the right people. I mean, I'm just totally incapable of doing this. It's way bigger than me. And I felt like he was so clear with me that, you know, I love you, you know, I'll surround you with the right people, you know, I won't leave you or forsake you and all that stuff. And so I'm like, well, so I committed to him that night. I said, God, you know, if you'll do it, if you'll show up, I'll show up, okay? But you got to show up, man, because this is way bigger than me. And thankfully he did. So I come back to the office the next day. I told my dad I'll do it. And I trust God's going to be with me and he's going to surround me with the right people. And since then, in 2008, in June, when I became CEO, in the middle of the worst recession since God knows when and all that mess, there was a lot of learning that came through that. But we've since then more than doubled. I think we went from 500 employees to almost, you know, 1,200 and some since. And we've just had a phenomenal growth from then till today. And a lot of wonderful things have happened. And I wish I had more time to get into some of those stories. But in the midst of that, again, I had a lot of challenges that I grew from and I learned from. But it was always fleeting, just like it had always been in my life. I mean, probably the most recent one I can think of just was 6 months ago before this whole cancer thing. My grandmother was dying, and I got a chance to spend a day with her the day before she passed. And when she passed, I had peace about it. I knew where she went, and I had a good perspective. And, you know, the things that matter, matter. The things that don't, don't. And I'm looking at things the right way. And like other challenges in my life, when you're in that right, you know, you're in the perspective, things are good. But then you get back to the daily grind, right? You know, the typical, the work stuff, the normal drama that comes in everyday life. And it was fleeting and it was gone, just like it had always been in my life. Well, the challenge that I've just gone through, I'm really believing for me, it won't be fleeting this time. In fact, I know that it won't. So now I'm going to get into the story of the cancer. Okay, every Saturday morning, I get up and I play basketball, and I need it. I need the physical competition. I work out in the gym during the week, and I hope I didn't just unplug something. I kicked out a, oh well. Anyway, I need the physical competition on Saturday mornings, and it's good for me. It gets the, you know, I get the mental stress during the week at work, and I work, lift some weights and all that, but the physical competition is great. And I play with guys mostly about half my age, because I'll be 40 this year, and most 40-year-olds are, you know, don't run as hard as I like to run, and I like the competition, all that stuff. So go out with a bunch of guys, like I said, in their 20s or mid-20s, and we have a lot of fun. I got one of my buddies here, Cube. You know, we all got nicknames for each other. One guy's Michael Bolton, you know. One guy's Fabio. One guy has a name I can't say in church. But anyway, I get a lot out of that, and it's normal for me to just go all out because I don't even like to win that much, but I hate to lose. So I bust my butt every Saturday, and it's pretty normal for me to come home after basketball and just feel whipped. My wife will tell you that. She'll concur. So anyway, this one particular Saturday last October, you know, October 2015, like any other day, I'm out there, I'm humping it, I'm busting my butt to try to win, and I really threw my back out terribly bad. So I come crawling into the house that day, and I jump in the shower, and I'm in there, and I've got pain in my back. I've got pain up here in my gut, and even pain in my groin. And as I'm feeling down here in my groin, I noticed that I had a lump on my testicle. And wow, did it freak me out. I had instant fear. I knew it was a big deal immediately. I knew I had to call a doctor, and I hate doctors. Sorry if anyone in here is one. But I just thought to myself, oh no, I know I gotta go and I don't wanna go. But I decided in the shower that Saturday, Monday morning, I was gonna get up and I was going to call the urologist and go find out what the heck this was. So I do that. I didn't wanna tell my wife about it. I knew she'd freak out. You know, she knows I'm not calling the doctor unless I'm really jacked up. So I didn't tell Abby. So Monday I call, he can't see me till, that was Monday. He couldn't see me till the following Friday. So during that week, and I'm feeling the weight of knowing there's something wrong, but not wanting to talk about it. And she could tell I was heavy, and you know, she would ask me, you know, what's wrong? Nothing. You know, I'm putting on the face for my kids, and nothing. Well, finally, I admitted to her. Okay, look, I found this lump, and I'm a little bit scared. And so obviously she was too. So anyway, I go see the doctor Friday morning in October. And he quickly feels the lump, gives me a sonogram, shows me on the screen the lump, and he says to me, Heath, I don't know if it's cancer. I do know it's a tumor, though, and it has to come out. And I said, like surgery out? He says, yeah, like surgery out. I said, oh, okay, well, what does that look like? He says, well, you need to leave here right now and go to Florida Hospital and fill out your paperwork this Friday afternoon because Monday morning you're having surgery first thing. So blown away, you know, I'm hurt and devastated by that and not knowing it's cancer yet, but knowing I've got to go have surgery on Monday morning. You know, I called Abby on the way, told her, hey, I'm going to the hospital, and here's what he told me. So I go do that and scared but still confident, still feeling like, you know what, it's probably not cancer, no big deal. I'll go through this, zip, get it knocked out. I still got one left. I'll be normal. I go and I do that. So I show up Monday morning for the surgery, and I go in there pretty confident about it, and the surgery goes well. And I remember laying there in the bed afterwards, and the doctor looks over my bed, and he says to me, Heath, the surgery went well. Your tumor markers, which is the blood results that you get, didn't show any tumor markers in my blood. So that's a good sign that if it is cancer, it's not spread into your body. So that was good news. That turned out not to be the truth. But that was good news at the time. Appreciate the praise God, but that turned out not to be true. So he tells me, that's good news. You know what? We took it out. It takes 48 hours for the pathologist to come back and tell us if it was cancer or not. But because there's nothing in your blood, surgery went well, you're in good shape. And he gave me a worst case scenario that turned out not to be the worst case. So I go home, and my whole mindset was on, okay, I got 48 hours. I got 2 days to wait for this. I got 2 days to find out what the heck that is or what it was. And 48 hours goes by, and I'm sitting there Wednesday, and the clock is literally ticking backwards, as you can imagine. And my phone doesn't ring all day. So I call him, and he says, look, I don't have results yet. I'm sorry. The pathologist is still running tests, which in my mind, I just had that bad feeling. That's not good. So the next day comes, Thursday morning, and no call. Finally, at 2 o'clock on Thursday, he calls me, and I could tell by the tone of his voice it wasn't good. And he said, yeah, you have cancer, and it's actually not a very good strain either. It's a non-seminoma, which means it's aggressive. It's something that radiation won't even kill. And if it has spread, there's some difficulties in your future. So obviously, you know, you hear that C word, and it's a devastating word to hear. I'll never forget that moment. You know, all the things start popping into your mind about, you know, having young children and the potential of not being here, and do I make videos of myself? You know, all that crap goes through your brain. It's very, very hard for me. So I get the, what he tells me at that point is, because it's cancer, we need to send you down in 2 days for a couple of CT scans. So I was waiting. Actually, that was Thursday. Sunday were the CT scans, so 3 more days. So that was the first time Florida Hospital and Altamont Kids scanned me. So for the next few days, I'm sitting at home waiting to go find out if it's spread anywhere. And I'm under it, and I'm weak, and I'm just, you know, again, putting on the face for my kids the best I can. I didn't even want to talk to them about this at this point. So I'm waiting, and that was the same week that the Paris terrorism attacks happened. So I'm sitting there, and everything on TV is terrorism and, you know, all that stuff. And I swear every commercial I saw was Cancer Center Treatments of America or MD Anderson. You know, I was just like, oh, I can't escape this. And I'm just so spent, but weak and all that I've never been before. And so I decided, you know what, I don't watch much TV, but I have some stuff recorded on the DVR for a time when I'm bored. And I told Abby, I said, I just need to go upstairs and be alone, and I need to watch something that's recorded that has nothing to do with terrorism or news or anything. And I noticed on the DVR I had 5 episodes of ESPN's 30 for 30 recorded. And the very first one of the 5, the topic, the title of it said, The Gospel According to Coach Mack. And I thought, okay, cool. It has gospel in the title. That's good. It's football. That's good. You know, I'm like, no terrorism, no, you know, whatever. I'm going to watch that. So I proceed to click it on. And it is a good message. Coach Mack was a Christian coach, and it was a great story. About 20 minutes in, and I'm finally not thinking about cancer, and I'm watching the story, and I'm getting something out of it. For the first time, I'm distracted. Coach Mack, he's the coach of the University of Colorado Buffaloes, and he took them from worst to first. And one of the things he did, he recruited the number one college quarterback or high school quarterback that year that had already committed to Nebraska. He rescinded the commitment and went to Colorado. Freshman year, the kid lights it up. I mean, has a phenomenal year, takes him pretty deep, win a lot of games, and then they were really set up for his sophomore year to win the national championship. And so, again, I'm into the story. Not long into his sophomore year, the kid gets sick. And they quickly find out he has cancer. And so in that moment, I hit pause, and literally, I'm like, really? Really? And I said it with anger in my voice, honestly. I'm like, this better freaking end well. I just got distracted, and now you're putting this in my face. And I'm literally saying to God, just like, this better freaking end well. This is not fair and all that stuff. Well, it didn't end well. Not long after the diagnosis, the young man died. So I'm sitting there, man, and I'm just under it, and I threw the remote down. I turned it off. I have since watched the rest of the story, and it is a great story, but I'm just feeling totally under it and beat up and stressed out and thinking, how in the world? I'm just trying to escape, and that's what I get hit with. So I watched that story. I'm upset. I knew I had to get to my CT scans on Sunday, so I grind through the rest of the weekend the best that I can. Sunday comes along, and I'm thinking, at least, you know what, I'm going to go in, and I'm going to get this scan, and I'm going to get my results and find out if this crap has spread in my body. So I show up on Sunday. I get to drink the nasty drink, so everything shows up, and I get the CT scans in my brain, my lungs, my lymph nodes, and, of course, they tell me 48 hours to get results when I'm done. I'm like, oh, gosh. So more waiting and worrying, I guess. So that was Sunday. Well, Tuesday morning was my meeting with the doctor to get the results. And I went in there, and he tells me, he gave me good news. And he said, you know, your blood work was still good. The CT scans looked good. Nothing showed up in your lymph nodes or your brain. However, there is a tiny little 1 millimeter spot on your lung. But he said, don't worry about that. you know, the cancer typically, it spreads to your lymph nodes and then it goes elsewhere, and your lymph nodes are clean, so I wouldn't worry about it. You may want to go see a specialist, but it doesn't spread that way, you're fine. So I thought, okay, well, that turned out not to be the case. So I set the appointment with the specialist in Indiana. The specialist couldn't see me for 2 weeks, but he told me, go get another blood test since it's been a few weeks to see if your tumor markers, if anything's showing up there. So I set an appointment here at the local LabCorp down the street. And I walk in, it's a 1:30 appointment, and I show up early like I do everything I do. And I walk in, and the guy behind the counter was kind of a jerk. I walk in, he's like, hey, you got an appointment? Like, yeah, man, 1:30, I'm here a little early. He goes, sign in. Okay. I sign in, I sit down. A few minutes later, he's like, you ready? I mean, not like, hey, Mr. Rittenhour, or he, I was like, you ready? I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. You know, I get up and I follow him. And in my head, I remember thinking, I'm glad this guy's working behind the desk and not the nurse going to draw blood out of my arm. Well, he proceeds to follow me in, shut the door, and get the gloves on. I wish I can tell you that my first response was to pray, but to be honest, it was, oh, beep. Then I went to pray, and I'm like, oh, God, man, look at this guy. He's a jerk. He's unprofessional, and now he's going to be drawing blood in my arm. At this time, I'm praying. He's getting the tourniquet on. He starts, and he does a great job. Draws the blood, does a good job on it, no problems. And when he was done, I looked at him. I said, wow, man, that was great. No problem. That was good. Now I'm just praying the results are what they need to be. And this guy's whole countenance changed. And he looked at me and he goes, you're going to be just fine, my brother. And he kind of winked at me and nodded his head. And I wanted to say thank you by his name. So I looked down at his name tag. And his name tag said Messiah. And in my head in the moment, it was like, oh my God, wow, you're in everything. And then in a minute, then I felt like a schmuck because I was judging this guy. But anyway, I left there feeling like, okay, God's in this thing. I'm going to get good results and my blood work will be good. And then I'll go to Indiana and find out what the heck that was. So as I'm waiting for my trip to Indiana, this was in December now of last year of 15. Every December, we do an Employee of the Year celebration at IOA. And we do it here in this auditorium. We walk our employees over. I videotape the message, which is typically on the business. And then we email out the message to all of our branches so they can see it. And I decided, you know what, I don't want to talk about this, but I don't want to send a generic email either. I might as well be authentic and share with what I'm dealing with to our employees, to our partners, and let them know. And maybe some good will come out of it. But, you know, I don't want to be the cancer guy. I don't want to be the guy up on stage. I mean, especially cancer in my nuts. You know? Who wants to talk about that? But I'm like, I'll do it, whatever. Hopefully it'll be used for good. Well, it actually was, because I had three people that heard that message that found lumps of their own, one of which was cancer. And he's now okay. Thankfully, his prognosis was better and easier than mine. But I started to see, okay, maybe this can be used for good, even though I really don't want to be up here talking about it. The next week, I go up to Indiana, and the specialist, Dr. Einhorn was his name, he looked at my scans and he said, I'm concerned about that spot on your lung. I think it is cancer. And I said, but the local guy, he goes, yeah, the local guy said, but your cancer travels in microscopic pieces. It doesn't always hit the lymph nodes. It can be elsewhere. I think that on your lung is cancer, but I'll tell you what, let's wait 6 weeks. Let's do another CT scan. And if that spot has grown, we'll know it's cancer because marks don't grow. So I wait 6 weeks, I get the test done, and sure enough, it grew from a 1 millimeter spot to the size of a little shirt button. So he then proceeds to tell me my next step is chemo. And he said, it's pretty intensive treatment. It's 9 weeks of treatment where you get treatment every week, but 3 of the 9 weeks is 5 and a half hours a day, 5 days a week. So he said, get ready for that. And obviously I'm devastated by that, scared, thinking, you know, I don't even take medicine when I'm sick. I mean, chemo. So I come back to Florida. I had a choice whether I could do it inpatient at the hospital or an outpatient at Florida Hospital's Cancer Center. And I chose outpatient because I wanted to sleep in my bed at night, see my family. I wanted to work when I wasn't getting treatment. I didn't want to be the guy sitting in bed feeling sorry for himself. So I chose outpatient. And I chose not to get a port. I chose to use IVs for the treatment. That was a mistake. But anyway, I go in the following January 11th was my very January 11th of this year was my first treatment of chemo, and I go into Florida Hospital's Cancer Center, and I'm telling myself before that, this isn't going to be that bad, man. You're strong. I'm telling myself, old ladies do chemo, man. Man up. You're going to be good. This is nothing. You know, you'll get through it. But man, I walked in there that morning, and I'd never been so scared as I looked around, and everyone in there didn't look so good. And I just, the fear came over me. And I sit in the chair, and they put the IV in my arm, and the nurse goes back in the back room where they mix your chemotherapy to then bring it out. And that usually takes about a half an hour. So when she put the IV in, she left to go mix my drugs. And this wonderful older lady, she was 70, Judy, sits next to me. And I'll never forget Judy for the rest of my life. Judy sits down and she says, "Hi, honey, what's your name?" And I said, "Hey, Judy." Or I said, "Hi, I'm Heath." And she says, "Well, I'm Judy. And what are you here for?" And I said, "Hey, you know, it's my first day. I'm scared. I got to take all this chemo and all that." And she proceeded to tell me her story. And she said, "Hey, honey, I'm 70, and 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer." And she said, "I had my surgery, I took the chemo, and the doctors, they gave me no hope, it wasn't working." And she said, "I'm here to tell you, today is my last treatment, that I just got a scan last week, and it was clear, and I'm fine, and I'm healed, and you're gonna be fine, and you're gonna be healed." And she just spoke life into me. And so I just felt like God sent her on the very first day of treatment for me. And again, I'll never forget that lady. And so it was better for me. And God, it was hard. But that first day was a lot better than it otherwise would have been. And that carried forward for the next, that 5 day week. Such a grind. Well, let me fast forward maybe to week 4. I don't even know. The dates are foggy in my head. Week 4, week 5 of my treatment. And the side effects were bad. You know, my hair was all falling out. I was feeling nauseous every day. I had massive heartburn and things I've never dealt with in my life. And I was just under it and weak, and I was having bad problems in my veins because I didn't do a port. My veins were literally, I had 3 of them blow out to where they weren't usable. The drugs would go into my system because the vein burst basically. So I go in this particular morning and I'm feeling under it and I'm feeling just vulnerable and weak and like I got no control over anything. And I told the nurse, Angela, that morning, I said, "Hey, Angela, God's got to show up today, man. You got to only poke me once. I can't get poked 8 times like the last few days. I don't have the energy to deal with it. I'm just praying it's going to work out today." And thankfully it did. She found a vein in my hand and it worked. And she started my 5.5 hour drip. And as that started, the guy next to me, and you know, I imagine it's what, you know, prison is like. It's like, "So what are you in for?" Yeah. So the guy says to me, I said, "You know, I'm here. Here's," you know, he overheard my conversation with Angela, the nurse. And so I told him my story and just said, "Man, I'm having vein problems and I'm having all these other problems and blah, blah, blah." And so the guy tells me his story. His name was Michael. And Michael's about my age. He's 42. And Michael proceeds to tell me that he has stage 4 colon cancer, just like Judy did. And he says to me, "Heath, you know, my story is had the surgery, taking chemo. The chemo isn't killing the cancer. It's just keeping the cancer from growing. So the doctors are telling me I'm going to be on chemo for as long as I can tolerate it, and that's it." And in that moment, I knew I was going to be used in that moment. And I told him Judy's story. And I said, "No, man, don't give up. Don't quit. Don't, you know, God can change things. And let me tell you about Judy. And I'll pray for you, man. I'll pray for you every single day." And I prayed for that dude right there in the chemo chair. We prayed together. And I know I made an impact on that guy's life, but I don't think Michael has any idea, frankly, the impact he made on my life. Because there was an entire shift in everything I was dealing with and my perspective from that moment and forward. And I was still in the middle of treatment. And I just started to see things through a different set of lenses. I began seeing this as an opportunity. An opportunity to grow and to learn and to make an impact in the midst of the struggle, the challenge. And I started to see those 5 hour days, those grinds, as instead of torture, which in a lot of ways it was, I started to see it as an opportunity. When else is a type A guy who can't sit still? When else am I going to be forced to sit in a chair and have an opportunity to read and to grow and to learn and to become a better husband, father, CEO, a better man, a better person, have a better relationship with my Heavenly Father. And maybe there's some things that can come out of this that'll be good. For the first time, I started to stop feeling sorry for myself because I was angry. You know, I had a lot of anger because I'm not a control freak, but I'm a guy in my life where I kind of had everything lined up. You know, business is good. I kind of had everything in control. And when I did something, I always made sure if everything went bad, it wouldn't get too bad. And, you know, I just kind of always had an out and everything was good. But when you're in a place where, you know, I couldn't will myself to make my veins work. I couldn't will myself to make my white blood cells high enough to get treatment. And if I don't get treatment, my cure rate goes down and all these things that it's just me and God. I got no control over anything. And I was angry about that because I felt like I'm not who I used to be. And in 60 days, I'm a different man and I don't have control of this and that. And then it dawned on me that I never had control to begin with. And any of you believing a lie that you have control, you're wrong. And I'll give you the best example I can. In October, a few weeks before my diagnosis, once a year in October, we give physicals to the IOA employees. And if there's such thing as a perfect physical, I got one. My blood work was perfect. It was in the top 5% of the National Institute of Health for everything, everything. So I get a perfect physical. But it dawned on me, the whole control thing. 3 weeks after that, you're in surgery, and another month later, you're in chemotherapy. How much control did you have to begin with? You were believing a lie, man. And to be honest with you, it kind of gave me some peace because then it was like, all right, God, it's just you and me. I can't control crap anyway. And so at that point, it's like, all right, I'm weak. I'm a shell of who I used to be, but in a lot of ways, I'm better. I have peace now because you know what? It's up to God. I can't fix it. I can't control it. I can't make my body do what I want it to do. And I started to have a shift in how I looked at life in general. And I'm very, you know, in a lot of ways, I had blinders on. I'm very type A. I got a million things going and a job with a lot of responsibility. And I used to look at my day of literally, it's like, okay, blinders on. I gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta do that. Start off, gotta take my son to school at 7:30. So I gotta get to work by 7:45 because I gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta do that. And then I realized, you know, in that moment that when you're threatened with not being able to do anything, it's not about what you got to do, it's what you get to do. And then I started to look at it like, you know what? I get to take my son to school every morning. I get to work in a job where it's not always perfect, but I'm around people I love, and I'm building something that's of value, that's lasting, that's not corporate garbage like you read about. I get to attend a church that I love with people I love, warts and all. How blessed am I? I get to. I don't have to. And that was a shift for me. You know, another shift that happened right about the same time where I had this conversation with Michael, and we prayed together. I was home one night, and I'm reading books with my son before bed. I had a really bad treatment day and I'm feeling like dirt. I'm feeling awful. He had a really bad day in third grade. And it's relative. So as I'm sitting at his bed and we're praying together and getting ready for bed, he's telling me all the reasons why he didn't want to go to school tomorrow and why things are bad and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And God showed me this in the moment. I said to him, I said, you know, son, I said, your dad's had a decent amount of success in his life, first in sports and then in business. But guess what, man? I've had a lot of wins, but I really haven't learned much from my wins besides maybe confidence. Your dad's learned everything in his life from my challenges, from my failures, from when I've fallen on my face, from cancer. Son, that's where your growth comes from. And you know what, buddy? In life, it's going to rain on you sometimes. I mean, that's just the way life is. You're going to have bad days. You're going to have bad experiences. You're going to have bad stuff happen. I pray it's never cancer, but just know that's where your growth comes from. That's what makes you a man, and it's okay. You'll be better because of it. So I guess what I'm trying to say in that conversation is I got closer. I had a deeper relationship with my children because of this. I was having conversations with my 9-year-old that I wasn't having 60 days ago. He has an understanding of things that he didn't 60 days ago, and we're closer because of that, and I'm thankful because of that. A lot of this stuff that happened in the midst of these challenges, I wouldn't go back and trade. And I'm thankful for it. And you know, you realize when you go through this stuff, a lot of the things that you've taken for granted in your life, and it's all the stuff you can think about, you know, your family, your work, your church, and all that stuff. But, you know, it's changed me in so many ways that, you know, I don't want to sound like a hippie, but I'm taking out the trash in the morning, and a guy that we meet with blinders on in the past, I was there to get the trash out and then go on about my day. I actually hear the birds chirping now. And again, I don't want to sound like some hippie guy, but I notice things I didn't notice then. I appreciate things I didn't appreciate then. I'm happier than I used to be just to get out of bed and feel normal. That it's that when I step, my foot hits the floor in the morning to feel normal, I'm thankful for that. So would I trade, you know, a few months of suffering for a better relationship with my children, for understanding, for peace, for a better perspective? I would. I pray I don't ever have to deal with this again, and I don't want to go back, but I've learned that I can trust God even when you get a false report, even when someone gives you false hope and it doesn't happen, that sometimes there's something better coming, that in the midst of that challenge and that struggle, even when it's getting worse, I can just tell you, every time in my life I've had bad things happen, that's where my growth has come from. So I just hope that that rings true with some folks here, that God's in it all, and that I've now gotten to a place where I start to go down the worry road. This isn't politically correct, but whatever, I'll say it. I go down that road, and now I just tell Satan, go F you. You got no authority here. I'm sorry, I know that's what I say. I'm like, you know, you got no authority here. I'm a child of God. All you can do is deceive me, and I'm not believing your lies. I'm not going to do that, and I don't care how bad things get. I don't care what happens. You have no authority here. I'm a son of Christ. You can't do anything to me. So go there. Go on the offense. Know who you are in Christ. You don't have to believe his garbage and his lies, because that's what they are, they're lies. You know, one of the things I got out of this, and I'll be honest with you in this area, is prior to this whole experience, I really wasn't mature enough to learn from other people's challenges. You know, I would have somebody around me get cancer, you know, and it would be like, oh, Joe, I'm sorry, I'll pray for you, and I would, and I was sincere in that, but I never really used that to think about how that could impact me, how I could grow from someone else's challenge. I mean, I honestly, if I'm being real, I just thought, cancer's for the other guy, man. I'm strong. You know, I'm young, I'm healthy. You know, I never looked at it that way. But I'm at a place now where I believe I'll be able to grow from others' challenges and get wisdom and grow from that. And I hope you're at that place and you're not ignorant like I was, because I missed a lot of growth opportunities by thinking, that can't happen to me, that's for the other guy. And that was a lie. And, you know, I honestly don't believe the stuff I'm telling you about that I learned. I don't think my hard-headed self could have learned it any other way than cancer. So in a lot of ways, I stand here today, and you know, I'm thankful for that. It's made me who I am. It's taught me things, again, I don't think I could have learned elsewhere. So I can't sit here and say that was such a bad thing in my life. You know, I now know what boasting in my weakness means. I was the fool, not Paul. I understand what he means. I mean, it's like, you know, two things in my life have softened me. You know, and I would have never used the word soft to describe me in any area 2 months ago. But cancer obviously being one, and I would say the other being having a little baby girl. That's off topic, but she softened me. And I think if you're a man and you have one and you haven't been softened, something's wrong with you. But I just see things differently, and I can actually boast in my weakness, and I can lean on my Father's strength rather than my own. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's all about him. And I just, my hope is that some of you in this room, when you're faced with your next challenge, you're going to look at that challenge as an opportunity, because guess what? It is. Even it might look bad. Your prognoses might be worse than mine, and I don't know what to say about that, but it is an opportunity. I promise you it is. And if you look at it through the right lenses, you'll grow from it and you'll be better because of it. And I'm just confident this time, folks, it won't be fleeting for me anymore. It won't be like it was all those other times where I had my head on right for a while until the daily grind comes back and then you lose it all. I'm not going back there. And I just hope and I pray and I encourage you all to take something from what I'm saying, that, you know, and that was my prayer this morning. It's like again, like I said, I don't want to be the cancer guy up here doing this. This isn't what I set out to do. But when God promised me in 2008 that he would show up, and he did, and he surrounded me with the right people in my business, and I promised him I'll show up too, this is me showing up, okay? I don't want to stand up here and necessarily do this. I don't live for this, but I do want to do what God wants me to do. And if he can use this for good, then I'm going to talk about my nut cancer. So I hope, I pray someone got something out of what I had to say this morning. You know, I honestly think maybe 90% or so of our happiness comes from choice, not circumstance. And it comes from the right perspective. It comes from understanding the truth about who you are in him. Not who you are in him. Changes everything. And so I hope and I pray that that's meaningful for someone in this room, as that was my prayer this morning, that if I'm going to get up and do something I really don't want to do, that God just use it, okay? And just like I promised him in 2008, the next time that door opens, I'll walk through it again because I really do want to do what he wants me to do. And every time I do, it turns out okay. So even though I said some things that might be inappropriate, I'm just being myself, and I hope you all, I hope I didn't offend anyone. Thank you. I want to be real. I'd rather you like me for who I am dislike me for who I am than like me for being a fraud. Thank you. So that's really all I have to say this morning. I thought, you know, I'll turn it over and give it to Clark in a minute, but I just thought maybe I'll say a little prayer before I close and just say, Lord, thank you for cancer. And I know that sounds weird to say, Lord, but I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for what you've done in my life. I'm thankful for the opportunity to be able to share it, Lord. And I just pray that the message is used for the people in this room and that it can be impactful, Lord, and that they know who they are in you, and that they understand the truth, and that if they don't, that they'll come meet you today when Clark gets up and speaks, Lord. And I just thank you and love you, and thank you for loving me before I understood what that even meant. And thank you that it's not based on what I do, and it's not based on how good I am. It's based on how good you are. And I just love you and thank you, and I just pray you touch the people here at Grace Church, Lord, and they go home better than they came. And I just love you and thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
You'll just stay standing, please. The people that know Heath best will tell you that there has been remarkable differences, small things, little ways, the way he engages, the way he stays engaged with you and doesn't check out to the next thing, little things that I'm still learning myself. So if you're here today and you know, without the Lord, where would we be, really? And what hope would we have? What future could we count on? What present help would there be to lean on outside of your own strength? I've often said this. You know, if there were no God, I'm better off believing there is anyway. My life is better because of that. And there is one, and I know him really well. So if you don't know the Lord, just believe, receive. To as many as received him, he gave the right, the power to become children or sons of God. So if you don't, just believe. Okay? He'll help you. Now I want to pray for you and give you just a couple of parting things and I'll let you go. And if you want to be prayed for today, our prayer teams will be here at the front after the service and you can come and be prayed for, prayed over. Some of you have physical challenges that are life-threatening, that are daunting. Come and let us enter into that with you and pray with you about it. We'd be glad to do that, and our prayer teams would be overjoyed to do that. And so let us pray with you if you have needs, whether it's physical, emotional, spiritual, financial, relational, whatever it is. We'll be Be glad to pray. It's a privilege. Now let me pray for you all. Lord, bless these dear ones. I pray, Father, for your Spirit just to speak to them about your presence, that you've not withdrawn, you're not gone, you've not pulled away, but in reality that you've pressed closer to them in their season and moment of need, and that you care. That you care, and that you're for them, that you're in this with them. So I pray for that comfort to come, that confidence to come, that God hasn't left me, that he's with me, and he always will be. I pray for those that are suffering. I pray, Lord, for healing and ministry. That all of us, Lord, might look up more than we have. Look up to you to be encouraged by your presence. To understand that things in the spiritual realm are not as they are here. Thank you, Lord, for your love for us. For Jesus' sake. Now, if you need ministry, you can come. You can be prayed for. We'd love to do that. Just a couple of reminders to all of you before you take off. If you haven't given today, please give attention to that. Our boxes, giving boxes are at the doors inside and out. We appreciate your support. And so thank you for that. And I'm in the, just started 2 weeks ago a series based upon the book of Ephesians. And we'll continue that next week. And the next session in this is really quite a remarkable one. And I really don't want you to miss it. So I'll see you next week. God bless you. I love you all. Pray you have a great week. If you need ministry, won't you come and let us pray for you right now. Okay? Otherwise, you're dismissed.